On ABC Victoria, you're with Prue Bentley.
Indeed you are. It's coming up to 9 minutes past four, and later on this hour, Matt and Kate will join us for sport. So if you've got a sporting highlight of the week, I'd love to hear from you this afternoon, this Friday afternoon. Now, to a story that is sad, but also a story that needs to be told. 11 years ago, Amelia Grodnowski chatted to her mum on the phone. It was pretty normal. They were close. Her mum, Lauren Whitehead, was really involved in her life. They signed off, making plans to see each other on the weekend. But then they never spoke again. Lauren disappeared from her Bannockburn home and has not been seen since. Amelia's been grappling with her mum's disappearance for more than a decade. And today, you're going to hear her story and some of the really specific cruelties of a life with a missing loved one. I started by asking Amelia what her mum was like.
You know, when I think about my mum was amazing. She, you know, had four kids under four and then me. So if you can imagine, very busy, always putting herself last, always making sure her kids were very well cared for. And, you know, she loved to enrich us and teach us about life. And, you know, she was a book lover. She loved Michael Bublé. We always had these family traditions which she created, as you do, you know. She was the maker of our childhood, you know. She always knew what to say when things were not quite right, or, you know, things were going wrong at school, or, you know, she just really was this memory maker that looked after us so well. And even in herself, she, you know, she's such a hard worker. When I now have a child of my own, you know, I go, oh my gosh, how did she even find time to, like, scratch her head, let alone do all the things that she did? Because I have one child and I run off my feet, let alone four under four and a teenager.
Let's go a little forward here, Amelia. How and when did you suspect that she had gone missing?
We go back to the 8th of February 2013, which was a Monday. On the Friday before she went missing, Mum and I had our last conversation, essentially. She rang me and said, hey, I'm not quite sure what I'm going to do this weekend, but I'm probably going to be out Friday and Saturday, but we'll catch up Sunday like we always do for coffee. On that weekend, I got quite unwell. I ended up in hospital with my diabetes, and I missed our coffee catch-up, and she wasn't answering her phone from the Saturday morning when I went into hospital, which I thought was a bit odd. But a little bit more about my mum, she was very forgetful. If her head wasn't screwed on, I'm sure she would have lost it. So I kind of thought that she just lost her phone, no worries. I really wasn't that worried, but at that time, I sort of thought, oh, it's a little bit odd she hasn't gotten back to me. It'll be fine. It'll just be Monday morning, we'll sort it all out. Monday the 8th rocked around, and I rang her office in the morning. Her boss goes, I was actually just about to call you. Your mum hasn't shown up for work. You know, she was going to be late. She'd always let her boss know. And she said, she hasn't contacted me. I haven't heard from her. I'm really worried. And I went, oh, okay, well, we'll go out to the house. I got to the house 10 o'clock that morning, and the doors were all open. The garage was open. I could see that the back shed was open. It was very odd, very, very strange. I could see the car was still in the garage, but everything was open. So I went in, and what I saw was all the walls were bare. Sheets were on the floor like she'd began to paint, and all the photos were removed off the fridge and the walls. There was a half-open can of dog food, rotten food on the floor that looked like the bowl had been broken or thrown, and fruit all over the floor. Her car keys, wallet and phone and all her insulin were all on her bed, laid out like she just left them there like she would when she got home normally. She sort of like unpacked her bag with things out on the bed. And it was just a very strange scene. It was so strange. It was dishes piled in the sink and things were a bit amiss. And I said, this is not normal. Like, there's something wrong here. And then from there, we called the police, and this nightmare just sort of continued and continued. And we are now still none the wiser.
What was the response of police?
Police weren't really that concerned, honestly. When we were sort of talking to them, you know, they saw the house and they weren't really that worried. When I was speaking to them, they said that they'd monitor things and they did a report, and they, you know, said to start making contacts with anywhere that Mum might have gone. And it turns out that there'd been a few phone calls made earlier around, you know, Mum had said to my grandparents in Queensland that she might have popped up to them for the weekend, or she had told another friend that she might go and see a Melbourne Storm game because she had won tickets for a local radio station to go to a Storm game that weekend. you know, there was a few scenarios of where she might have been or what might have happened, but we knew that she didn't turn up to the children's swimming on the Saturday, which she'd normally go to. And then Sunday, she also hadn't gone to church. So, you know, there were a few points that we knew she didn't show up for. So the last pinpoint we can kind of make is, one, the CCTV footage from the supermarket at 3 o'clock on a Friday before she went missing. And then the phone call with me as well, which again was around 3 o'clock on the Friday afternoon, was sort of the last point in contact that anyone had with my mum.
So it sounds as though the police, I mean, they don't sound like they were as worried as you were. How did that play out, and what was the police role?
So the police role in the beginning was obviously interviewing immediate friends and family. So that's, the local police did that. And in that, my stepdad said that she's done this before. The truth was that she had, in the years just before my parents' divorce, there was quite a lot of heated arguments, and she had left for one period of time, but we knew where she was in that period of time, even though my stepdad did not. And the police took that at face value, as you would. They said, we'll just wait for the Friday, when the following Friday, when the children are meant to be handed back over. So there was a waiting period of 5 days or to the following Friday, where mum was meant to then take the kids back after her week off, essentially. And we waited. And we waited at the school drop-off point, and mum didn't show back up.
And this was in 2013, and
correct,
her disappearance has never been resolved.
No, we are none the wiser. We're probably, if not more, confused this time down the track. We've had no clear leads, and we are no further advanced than we were a decade ago.
So if we fast forward to the last month, and you've seen the huge response, outpouring of community concern for the disappearance of Ballarat woman Samantha Murphy. How do you feel in that circumstance?
Proud of the police, like, to see the difference and the change in that response. Obviously, as a family member, I could only wish that they had similar swift responses and resources that they're dedicating to this woman. And I'm, you know, hearing through closer friends and family, I've had to soothe a lot of anger from my friends and my family, or friends of my mum's and my family. I personally was a little bit, you know, upset, thinking, oh my goodness, they've got all these resources, and why didn't we get that, and why didn't they believe me like that? You know, it almost felt like they devalidated me at the time. But when I think on it and reflect on it a little bit more, it's actually so nice to see how far we've come as a society in, one, the stigma towards missing women particularly, but two, also the police, the change in process and protocol, and, you know, that must be in place for these systems and services to now be available for family, and the resources that they've dedicated to the Samantha Murphy case is admirable. It's really so good to see things like the counter-terrorist unit and using these resources, and, you know, the massive outpouring from the community. And I guess that can, one, be attributed to the true crime wave that has thoroughly swept over Australia. Like, every person I speak to is listening to some kind of true crime podcast. People are very interested and dedicated, especially when it's in their community, to missing people and listening to these podcasts and trying to help the community with any information that they can. But I also think that that's such a double-edged blade, in that people are more sceptical and judging and harsh towards these families as well, when we might need more sympathy and support rather than people judging and making snap judgments.
You're listening to my conversation with Amelia Grodanovsky, whose mum, Lauren, went missing from Bannockburn, which is between Ballarat and Geelong, 11 years ago without a trace. Amelia is appealing to the public for any information that might help to solve her mum's case. In a moment, you're going to hear from Lauren O'Keefe, the founder of the MIST Foundation, who dedicates her life to supporting the family and loved ones of long-term missing people. Next as well, Amelia's going to share her regrets and the practical challenges families are faced with in trying to deal with the affairs of someone who's been missing for years. It is something that I don't think many of us would have thought of initially. And you might be surprised to hear what she has to say. Amelia, though, in that interview, she mentioned that her mum loved Michael Bublé. So we thought we'd play a little song for her. This is Everything.
You're a fallen star, You're the getaway car, you're the line in the sand when I go too far. You're the swimming pool on an August day, and you're the perfect thing to say. And you play it coy, but it's kinda cute. Oh, when you're smiling at me, you know exactly what you do. Baby, don't pretend that you don't know it's true, 'cause you can see it when I look at you. And in this crazy life, and through these crazy times, it's you make me sing your every line, your every word, your everything. You're a carousel, you're a wishing well, and you light me up when you ring my bell. You're a mystery, you're from outer space, you're every minute of my everyday. And I can't believe that I'm your man, and I get to kiss you, baby, just because I can. Whatever comes our way, I will see it through, and you know that's what all love can do. And in this crazy life, and through these crazy times, it's you, you make me sing your every line, your every word, your everything.
On ABC Statewide Drive, you with me, Prue Bentley. My guests are Lauren O'Keefe from the MIST Foundation and Amelia Grozdanovsky, whose mum, Lauren, went missing from Bannockburn 11 years ago. I also asked Amelia what she wishes she'd known way back in 2013 that she knows now.
I wish I had known that it was okay to just grieve in that moment and not be always in this constant state of guilt and fear and self-guilt. There's so much self-guilt in that time of, you know, wishing I could have done something to save her or like find her, or, you know, I wish I had been more assertive at the time, knowing what to say to police in those moments and being able to destigmatize in those moments and know what I know now and saying, hey, actually that piece of information you've published is incorrect, or what you're saying is actually incorrect. You know, I definitely would tell myself, you know, to be a lot more assertive and to be a lot more pressing and have not a fear of what the police might think if I did say, get a bit more assertive and be like, no, actually, I really want this investigated and I really want this to be done, and these time essential things, which are now a little too late to do now. I wish I had the courage to speak up back then and been like, no, I would like this done, please, or getting those resources allocated to us as a family.
Over the years, you must have thought a million different things about what happened to your mum. What do you think now?
Oh, again, a really hard question. When we are missing person families, every scenario comes up in your mind, from mum sitting happily on a beach in the Bahamas all the way through to being locked in someone's basement 5 kilometres away from where she was were missing from. Like, you have the worst and best case scenarios that constantly go through your head. Personally, as a family member, I think she's met foul play. I don't know who from. You know, we all have our theories, and every person in our family has their theories about what happened as time has gone on. But, you know, I personally think that she's met some kind of foul play, and I think it just takes that one piece of information from someone to come forward and be like, yep, this is the conversation I've had with someone, or this is something that was said to me, or your mum said this to me. And it just only takes that little bit of information from them to come forward and be like, this is what happened, to put our final piece of the puzzle in place. And I think every missing person family will tell you that exact sentiment, is that we need any information, no matter how small you might think it is, might be that final piece of the puzzle that clicks everything together and might mean everything to our family.
Amelia, thank you so much for telling your story. I mean, it is, I know it's something that you've been living with for over a decade, but I totally appreciate that every time you speak about it, it hurts. So I do understand, and I really appreciate you sharing that with us. I'd like to also talk to Lauren about the MIST Foundation. So Lauren, off the back of Amelia's comments around families in this position, and there are so many families in this position, have a similar outlook. They're just looking for that little piece of the puzzle. Can you talk me through why you set up this Foundation and what it is you're hoping for through it?
My younger brother Dan went missing in 2011, and our family very soon realised that the expectations set by, you know, TV shows and movies are completely unrealistic. And like Amelia mentioned, you know, the police response really does depend on the capacity of the local police that your missing loved one is reported to. And then on top of that, you know, if the police do determine that a case is not suspicious, as was the situation in Dan's, there are even fewer resources available. So we turned to the public very quickly for support. And then eventually other families started asking for help. So in 2013, I actually founded this charity, the MIST Foundation, to address what is a growing issue in our country. We're now up to, on average, 150 Australians going missing every single day. You know, while thankfully the overwhelming majority of people who are missing are found safe and well, like in Amelia's case and my own, up to 5% can go on to become long-term missing, which is beyond that 3-month mark. Based on research, we know that at least 12 people around that one individual who's missing are adversely impacted by their disappearance, financially, emotionally, psychologically, and yet there is no funded service in Australia to support this growing community. And I think a big part of that challenge is that the whole issue of missing persons is oversimplified as a police matter when it's actually a community issue. You know, everyone has a role to play in this, because once that initial sort of police response and search has been exhausted, you know, someone is still missing, where are these families supposed to turn for help? Just in the last 3 years, we've seen an increase of more than 35% of missing persons incidences reported to police in Australia.
That's extraordinary, an extraordinary number. Yeah. We can go some way to understanding the emotional burden of a long-term missing person, missing loved one. What are the financial consequences of this?
Oh, well, I mean, every case is different, of course, but it depends on the role that missing loved one played in terms of the family unit. So each family is going to have different practical repercussions of their loved one going missing, depending on, you know, who that person was in that family sort of dynamic.
In these cases, how long does it take for a death certificate to be issued?
Well, part of the problem is that there's no uniformity. Each jurisdiction, like with police protocols, has a different process, and really, in order to get a death certificate, families have to go through the coronial inquest process. And in some cases, there's a requirement that police refer a case to the coroner after 12 months. That's the case in New South Wales. That's not the case in other parts of the country. So there's a real lack of uniformity. And some families have waited, you know, up to a decade and beyond, as in Amelia's case, to be able to go through the coronial process.
Amelia, just on this, have you gone any way to getting a coronial inquest?
So we've been pushing for a coronial inquest for our family for the last 5 years, not to settle her missing person case, but to close the financial matters so that family can grieve. We currently still manage mum. We have to do a tax return every year. We have to rent out her house. We're not allowed to sell any of her belongings. We have to keep all her belongings in storage. We have to go through VCAT, which is the Victorian, essentially, family matter court system that allows us to pay off all her debts and manage her super accounts and things like that. We, as I said, been trying for 5 years, and we have been told that potentially halfway through this year, maybe next year, we might get a coroner's inquest, but they're still not certain, and the police have really not given us any indication when they'll refer our matter. We've also hired a lawyer to assist with this process, and they're still, we've been with that lawyer for nearly 2 years and still fighting to get one.
I understand that you have some new photos that will be released to allow you to fulfil some of the requirements.
Correct.
To get a coronial inquest.
Yeah.
Tell us about that.
So when we originally initiated this coronial inquest process, the police informed us that we needed to meet some criteria. So an age progression photo was one of them.
This sounds like a full-time job, Amelia.
It is. I spend roughly 20 hours a week on between managing Facebook pages, managing her affairs. It's a full-time job. And it means also that it detracts from being able to grieve as a family, because you're constantly having arguments about the 20 small decisions that you have to make. Things as simple as closing down memberships become this uphill battle that they go, well, we need to speak to that person directly to be able to close the membership. And you go, well, if you can find her to close that membership down, that would be absolutely fantastic. Just let me know when you get a hold of her. Thank you very much. That would be great. So, you know, for instance, we paid 2 years a gym membership that she never used because they needed her in person to be able to close it down.
That's criminal, though. Mm-hmm. But that's, I mean, gyms are like that sometimes, aren't they? But still, I mean, that just seems so counterintuitive and it's so wrong, isn't it?
It is, but it's the reality. And these are all the things no one tells you when their loved ones go missing, that that's the other burden or the other grief. Grief is the only word that comes to my mind, because not only are you laying there worrying about your loved one, thinking of all the scenarios that might have happened to them, but then you're also worrying about financials, and then you're having to work to then, because you can't touch their financials, obviously. So then you're having to work to pay off their things and figure out where this money's going to come from. And it was something that we were not expecting when mum went missing. And over time, you know, we were just kind of, we put things on hold for as long as you can.
Oh, look, this is so, I mean, I had never reckoned that something like this could have so many consequences, even beyond the kind of emotional ones that I think are pretty understandable at the outset. Thank you both so much for spending your time telling me all about this today. I mean, you know, we're really committed to putting the story out there. Lauren, just quickly, how can people assist your foundation in the work that you do?
So the MISS Foundation exists really to humanise missing Australians, to alleviate the profound burdens, like Amelia's just touched on, the practical and the emotional, and also to transform the way that our society responds to this issue. So we would really like to encourage all Australians to better understand the experience of living with ambiguous loss, which is the type of grief that families of missing people experience, so that we can better support not only the families, but also the friends and the communities who are missing a loved one.
That was Lauren O'Keefe and Amelia Grozdanowski telling her story about her missing mother. If you've got any information that might assist police in relation to Lauren Whitehead, you can call Crime Stoppers on 1-800-333-000. And you can connect with Amelia via the Facebook page Missing Person Lauren Jane Whitehead. And for resources and to support the MIST Foundation, you can head to mist.org.au.
Here's my top footy tip for the season. You can get your games live and ad-free on the ABC Listen app.
That's insightful!
I know, right? AFL, NRL, men's, women's. Whatever footy you're after, we've got you covered.
Kicks him on the leg, he does, he bounces and throws.
Every goal, try, mark and tackle. Called by ABC Sports expert commentary team.
How did he do it? Game, set, bingo.
This season on the home of 100% pure footy, the ABC Listen app.